So last week I asked you a question. You remember what the question was? You're beautiful. For that, I'll come back next week. And so if some of you can remember that far back. And who are you? You are chosen by the Father, redeemed by the Son, sealed by the Spirit, and God has empowered you to do whatever he calls you to do. And you were praying this morning about the power of God, and he's given us all the power we need to do what he's called us to do. So that was my question last week, who are you? And I have another question this week. You know, Jesus, he didn't always answer questions. He often liked to ask questions. And you know why he did that? Because when people ask you questions, sometimes it's sort of like they're digging around in your soul, you know? You know, why are you asking me that question? Well, just because I'm interested in what you're going to say in response. And so here's this question. Who are you? And this is a related question. What are you doing here? Say that with me. What are you doing here? Turn to the person next to you and ask them that question. I hear some laughing. I guess that means some people have no clue. How many of you have at least once in your life had no clue what you're doing here? Especially after Zach hasn't experienced this yet, but after several years of marriage, that question will come up in your mind, you know? So, you know, you'll dismiss it, you'll rebuke the devil, but the question will come up. So, I have heard that as a pastor of a large church, I have heard that in the funniest places. People, they see me out of church, and that's what they ask me. What are you doing here? You know, I was at Walmart. I'm pushing a cart, bumping into two people from the church, and they say to me, what are you doing here? Like I'm in a porn shop or something, you know? I was in a baseball card shop, and a young man came in. This is a true story. And he said, so this is where our tithe money goes. I said something non-pastoral at that moment. But what are you doing here? So I bumped into somebody, and they're standing in front of my shopping cart. What are you doing here? I said, well, look at my shopping cart. I'm here to buy Equate Metamucil. And this is a true story. And they look in the shopping cart, kind of look at me. So you want to know what I'm doing there? That's what I'm doing there, okay? I've had the funniest things happen to me. In the men's room at Word of Grace, between the services, I'm using the men's room. It's a long day, you know, in the new building. And some of you know Gary Jackson. How many of you know Gary Jackson? Gary Jackson built, his company built all our buildings on our campus and Concord. And Gary was, he was a chairman of our board, and he was a chairman of the very first building campaign. And he said, I've been a chairman of building campaigns at other churches, and we finally built a building here. And Gary, I'm in the men's room. And Gary says to me, so you use this room too? I'm like, dude, this is so weird. I mean, when you would never say that to anybody else. It's like pastors have this, you know, it's just weird. You know, what are you doing here? I said, I have no clue, and I've always wondered what goes on in this room. Then there was another pastor I bumped into in the restroom at the Suns game. And he came right from the urinal and said, Brother Gary! I said, talk to you later. Said, what are you doing here? You know? Okay, that's pretty much it for the day. So, I should tell him that one other story. It's not, the woman didn't say, what are you doing here? But it was really funny. It was at Kmart in the garden shop. And I don't know, I was carrying some fertilizer or something, had shorts on. And someone comes up to me, she's coming into the garden shop. She goes, oh, Pastor Kinnaman. you know, it's kind of like you're seeing God in the garden shop. And she said this, "I've never seen your legs before." She meant to say, "I've never seen you in shorts," but when you see God at Kmart, it just comes out wrong, you know? So what are you doing here? Say that with me one more time. What are you doing here? And turn to the person one more time next to you and ask them, "What are you doing here?" Okay. Could it be that wherever you are right where God wants you to be? But would it also be possible that you're not really thinking about that? That just God comes to you in a moment, and it's so unexpected. You know, I'm doing this series of messages here, calling it God's amazing, crazy, amazing plan, His plan for your life. And this message is about surprises, all right? And that could it be that wherever you are, you're right in the middle of God's will for your life, and maybe, just maybe, whatever is happening in your life is not actually about you. This is the hardest thing for us to understand, that when things go north or south, we think about, well, why is God doing this, you know? Or why did God bless me like this? Or why is this situation so painful, you know? And could it be that where you are at this moment is not just about what God wants to do for you and in you, but what He wants to do through you? All right? And that's for the sake of others. It's not about you. I think Rick Warren, that's a Bible verse from Rick Warren. It's not about you. As Christians, you know, they love to say, all things work together for good for those who love God. And that's usually, they say that about themselves. They don't really say it about, you know, things are working together for good in me for you. It's a very different way to think about life. So, in the book of Esther, and this is our text today, Mordecai, who is a prominent Jew, he says it to a young Jewish woman, probably a teenager, in the harem of a Middle Eastern king. What does he say? "And who knows but that you have come to royal position for such a time as this?" That's not just for Esther. I want to emphasize, this is a teenager. Probably. But it's not just for Esther, it's a statement that you can say to yourself in every moment of your life, this moment, what are you doing here? Okay, who are you? You got to know who you are, and when you know who you are, we talked about Ephesians chapter 1 last week, when you know who you are, you're going to bring that into the moment, all right? But we're going to see Esther didn't really know who she was, and nobody else really knew who she was. They certainly didn't know that Mordecai and Esther were Jews, all right? So let me give you a little background on this. You know, Esther is it's the last book of the Old Testament historical books. It's actually the origin for the Jewish festival of Purim. And Esther is a young queen, and she's become queen because the former queen, she was dismissed by the king. And she was an orphan child, was being raised by Mordecai. And Mordecai, a Jewish person, there was probably some relationship there. And there was this very evil man by the name of Haman, or maybe Haman, maybe that's how you pronounce it. I've always called him Haman. He became the prime minister of this ancient kingdom. And he was very much opposed to the Jews. And so he has a plot. He devises a plot and sets a date for the destruction of all the Jews and that are in Babylonian captivity. Okay, so we're talking about God's people in Babylon. And, you know, there's a lot I could say. I touched on this last week. America is increasingly Babylon. And, you know, what is our role in that? And how are we supposed to behave ourselves? And how are we supposed to respond in very difficult times? So, with that in mind, we're going to look at Esther chapter 4, if you have your Bible with you. And we're going to discover six important lessons about living your life for God and others, and in so doing, to discover who you are and what you're doing here, all right? So some of you like to take notes, some of you don't, you know, some of you are going to pull some Kleenex, try to take notes on a Kleenex because all of this is so really important and so good, you know, but anyway, I've got some points here, and the first point is this. This is what we learn. Do everything you can and leave everything else to God. Okay, this is the first thing we're going to learn, all right? So Esther chapter 4, beginning in verse 6, says this. So, hey, Thatch. I've often think of these. There are great Bible names that we never use for our children. What's your little boy's name? Hey, Thatch. Oh, that's cute. Okay, so Hathach went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict for their annihilation, which had been published in Susa, to show to Esther and explain it to her, and he told him to urge her to go into the king's presence to beg for mercy and to plead with him for her people. Now, you know, this is a hopeless situation. These people are in the minority. They're undocumented aliens, you know. Anyway, they're in the minority, and it's an absolutely impossible situation. So anyway, I'm reading from a wonderful statement from the NIV Life Application Bible. And the writer says this: God was in control. Now, I like, you know, this is such a commonly stated maxim. You know, God, how many of you have said to somebody else, God is in control, you know? And you tell yourself that and you don't totally believe it. You know, God is in control. You know what's remarkable about the book of Esther? And I think it's a metaphor. Esther is the only book in the Bible that doesn't mention God. I don't know how many of you know that. It's a peculiar footnote. And yet the story is all about God. But it's a metaphor because really the way I live my life, I've been a pastor for all these years. My wife and I have been married forever, 47 years this summer. And we got 3 kids and we got, you know, 9 grandkids. And, you know, I can tell you most of the minutes and hours of my life, I'm not really thinking about God or how God is in control. I sort of have to bring him into the moment. Isn't that the way it is? I mean, we don't really always live by faith. We live by sight. And the book of Esther is, I think this is a powerful message, that it's a story about the working of God, but God is never mentioned in the story. So, God was in control, yet Mordecai and Esther had to act. We cannot understand how both can be true at the same time, and yet they are. God chooses us to work through those who are willing to act for him. And we should pray, I like this statement, we should pray as if it all depended on God, and act as if it depended on us. We should avoid two extremes, doing nothing and feeling that we must do everything. And then in the NIV, Life Application Bible, it says this: the story of Esther illustrates that human action is essential to divine providence. This is a grand mystery, how we're in this together with God. And sometimes God works like on our behalf without us, and other times we do something, and then we look back and we say, well, God must have been in that, you know? So a man plans his ways, but the Lord directs his steps. So the story of Esther illustrates that human action is essential to divine providence, and yet God's triumph in history ultimately does not depend on what we do, but on what he does. It depends not on our character, but on his character. If it ever depended on our character, nothing good would ever happen. Oh, maybe once in a while. You might win the lottery after living a really bad week. You know, it's weird. Well, so now number 2. So what are you doing here, okay? Everything in your life ultimately has something to do with God's purposes for others. You know, we're so self-focused, really. And I'm no different than the rest of you. I love to say this. I have not mastered what I'm preaching this morning. Marilyn will tell you that. I'm a mouthpiece, and God puts things in my heart, shows me things in the Word, but I'm in this with everybody else. And everything in my life is so much about me. I mean, it's just like I can't, you know, it's me on the freeway, it's me and my family, it's me and my stuff, and I have others orbiting around me, but mostly it's about me. And if you're honest with yourself, that's just the way we live as human beings. But everything in your life ultimately has something to do with God's purposes for others. Like when you have children, it's pretty much not about you. It's about them for 20 years. All right, so verse 9. Hathach went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said, and then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, okay, I love Esther's initial response because it is so human. All the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that he be put to death. Now, you know, we read the story of Esther and we think, oh, what a lovely, wonderful woman of God she was. Her first response is, are you kidding me? I just was made queen. I was chosen the best. I'm the best woman in the harem. And now you want me to go in and talk to him about this problem? Are you kidding me? Because he could kill me. You know, you could say, well, that's a selfish response. It is just a classic human response, because we don't really think about the broader implications of how we deal with issues in life. So he says the only exception to this is for the king to extend the gold scepter to him and spare his life. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go into the king. Are you kidding me? Christians love to ask, what's God's purpose for my life? It's the wrong question. The correct question is, what is God's purpose for others through me? Is this not exactly what Esther was facing? Was this about her? Ultimately, it really had nothing to do with her, except she was just in the wrong place at the right time, if you would talk to her. So what does Rick Warren say? What's Rick Warren's favorite Bible verse? It's not in the Bible, but it's not about you. But whenever anything happens, that's the first thing. Why is this happening to me? I don't know how many. I think I told you when I was here last time, I just, was I in a boot? I can't remember, because I blew out my Achilles tendon in February. Did I mention that when I was here? All right. Anyway, you would have remembered it. I blew out my Achilles tendon, and so I was on a scooter, and I was on a scooter in a boot with crutches, and then just with a boot for like 8 weeks. And I had a few meltdowns. When you're on a scooter, okay, you have to get, you know, you got to get a knife out of the drawer on the scooter, going into the bathroom. You know, I'm sort of, it's the low end of my thought life here, but just going into the bathroom with a scooter. You know, and I've seen people in wheelchairs. I wasn't thinking about them. I was thinking about me and my scooter. And then just a month ago, this is 3 months after the surgery, it got infected, and I had to have a second surgery, and the doctor told me, your Achilles never healed. And if any of you see, I got this little kind of fancy little lace thing right here. I'm on a PIC line, if you know what that is. I administered drugs to myself this morning. I mean antibiotics, okay? So I'm going through this, and I know it's not like what my daughter-in-law has faced, who had a brain tumor removed a year ago, this last week, and it was malignant. But it's all about me, you know. Just ask Marilyn about that, you know. She's angelic. She's been such a wonderful support and companion. But I'm just saying that this is always our first response. It's so hard to think outside of what you are going through. And this is Esther's response, and this is in the Bible. And she's not scolded for it. And God doesn't say to Mordecai, okay, you got to look for somebody else because she's just too selfish. Okay? God has not placed you in your present condition or your present situation just because he has a personal issue with you. You know, why is God doing this to me? He put you there to serve him and to serve others. All right? Look at Matthew chapter 20, verse 25. Jesus says this. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them, but not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant." That's what you call living for others. Slaves have no independence, freedom. They're not living their lives for themselves in any way. They're living their lives for the person who owns them. And so, whoever wants to be first must be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. I mean, this is why Jesus came. You know, you never once hear him say, I mean, in the Garden of Gethsemane, he says, "Remove this from me," but he never says, "Why is this happening to me?" Mother Teresa wrote a little book, My Life for Others. Isn't that just a beautiful way in four words? Is that four words to describe what all of us have been created for? It's so hard for us to get to that place, to know who we are and why we're here. What are you doing here? All right, so, and there's the great commandment. What's the great commandment? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And some people have kind of turned that upside down and say, well, you can't love your neighbor until you love yourself. The problem is you love yourself too much. I'm a cruel teacher of God's word, okay? This is what's wrong with happiness. Happiness is about relationships and circumstances and things that you want to make you happy. Joy is fulfilling the purpose of God in your life, not to serve yourself, but to serve others. All right, so, you know, at first Queen Esther could only think about herself. Are you kidding me? Why is this happening to me? But Mordecai perceived that God had a plan for Esther that went way beyond her personal life. Okay, so, number three here, the third point is, so what are you doing here? Say this with me, nothing in life is an accident. Nothing in life is an accident, okay? Al Els has been a personal counselor to me through the years, and I just, you know, he's very, some of you know Al, he's very compassionate, empathetic, he listens to you. He commiserates with you, and he asks this question, which drives me crazy. So what's God telling you about, you know, I know what those people did to you, but what's God telling you about you, you know? And what is that about? So this is one of the most significant, best-known statements in the Bible in Esther 4:14. It says, "For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to royal position for such a time as this." You know, it's interesting. Mordecai isn't certain. He's not certain that this is going to work out. He can't assure Esther that she's not going to die. The only thing he knows is that somehow God is going to fulfill his purposes. And he's going to use somebody, right? And there's a lot of uncertainty in this story. And again, it's such a powerful narrative about not just this ancient teenage queen, but about you and me. That's what the Bible is all about. So Karen Jobes, who writes for the Life Application Bible Commentary, she says this, "Life is full of seemingly insignificant events that in retrospect we recognize as changing the course of our lives. Every new day brings circumstances and decisions, and we cannot know how one event will lead to another. Only God knows the end of the matter before it has even begun. God is invisibly at work." That's the book of Esther. He's not mentioned in Esther, but he's invisibly at work, making even life's greatest disappointments a link in a chain of good things yet to come. When all is said and done, God uses even injustice to fulfill his promises to us. As Joseph explained to his brothers, "You intended harm for me, but God intended it for good. How is that possible? It was not in spite of the greatest injustice and most concerted evil against Jesus that God achieved his work of atonement, but through those very acts of injustice and evil. What mind-bending mystery. Well, number five, you can't, did you know this? This is our memory verse, special memory verse today. You can't take it with you. I heard a story about a guy who, he just hoarded cash, and he had it everywhere in the house, and he had it hidden everywhere, and he didn't even want his wife to have it after he died, but she kind of knew where it was, and he said, I want you to put all this cash into my casket, and so I want you to put all the money into the casket. So when he died, she took all the money, put it in the bank, wrote out a check, put it in his casket. You can't take it with you. I can't remember which pastor told me this, but he did a series on life and death and how you can't take it with you. And he got a hearse with a U-Haul and parked it in front of the church entrance on Sunday. So everybody would have to walk by the hearse with the U-Haul. You can't take it with you. Okay, so look at Esther chapter 4, verse 15. Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai, "Go gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me." Now her heart is changing. She realizes that she became queen. You know, she's got everything she could ever ask for, all the best perfumes in the world and eunuchs, you know. That's what every woman wants. That's what the U2 movement needs, you know, is eunuchs. Something has happened in her heart. And she says, then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai, "Go gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maids will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it's against the law." And would you say this with me? "If I perish, I perish." Now, you can't take it with you. I'm going to reverse myself here. There is something that you can't take with you. And it's the only thing you can take with you. And we should take as much of this with us as we possibly can. And that's what we do for others. That goes with us into eternity. Think about that. What does Esther have to take with her? Nothing. I mean, she died anyway, you know, eventually. We don't know really the whole story. But she has something to take with her. In fact, she has us to take with her. It's incredible. The only thing that you can take with you is what you do for others. Karen Jobs writes, "We treasure security even though we know that security in this life carries no guarantee. Possessions can be destroyed, beauty fades, relationships can be broken, death is inevitable. Real security then must be found beyond this life. Only when our security leads to God and his unchanging nature can we face the challenges that life is sure to bring our way." And look at what Paul says in 2 Corinthians. He says, "Therefore we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we're wasting away, yet inwardly we're being renewed day by day. For our light momentary troubles," I love that, our light momentary troubles, that would be like beaten, stoned, you know, in a shipwreck floating in the ocean, being bitten by poisonous snakes. These are light momentary afflictions, kind of like when the server brings you the wrong meal at the restaurant. Or when you're sitting in the plane on the runway for 32 minutes. Okay. Light momentary afflictions. Okay. "For our light momentary afflictions are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal." And this leads me to my sixth point. Both Esther and Mordecai, it says five up there. I got the wrong number in my notes here. Anyway, this next point is really important. Forget the number. Both Esther and Mordecai are faithful no matter what it costs. To me, the most powerful virtue of the Christian life is not faith to move mountains, but faithfulness when the mountains don't move. See, I'm gonna walk with God. There's a story about that in the Old Testament. We'll get to that in just a minute. I'm going to read a scripture, but in Esther, we get back to this passage again. Esther says, verse 16, "If I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. It's awesome. Life is never what anyone wants it to be. Have you heard this Bible verse? It is what it is. Have you heard that? I heard a comedian say one time, we never say that when things go well. Hey, you know, I won the lottery. And your friend says, well, it is what it is. You know, I just got a brand new sports car. Oh, it is what it is, you know. He's saying that because he doesn't get the sports car, right? So it is what it is. And I've come to believe firmly that the most essential virtue of the Christian life is faithfulness. Okay, pressing forward and not letting yourself feel like a victim, because you can see God working in and through and in spite of circumstances and people. If you perish, you perish, but at least you'll do it honorably and faithfully. Martin Luther, we just celebrated the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. He said, "Here I stand. I cannot recant." And everything changed. Human history changed. Have you heard this one? Patrick Henry is famous for saying, say with me, "Give me liberty or give me death. If I perish, I perish." And I, you know, this is something that's sobering. We remembered this just last month, or in April. If we could look at the next slide. Dr. King, what are you doing here bleeding out on the balcony of the cheap motel in Memphis? Is he doing it? Why is this happening to him? You had a remembrance service here on April 4th, the 50th anniversary of his assassination. It's not the dream he had in mind, but a huge step forward in fulfilling the dream. He became an international hero. Look at this next slide. This is the cemetery at Gettysburg. And I want to ask the question, what are these boys doing here? They didn't even find out who won the war. And Lincoln says, "We here highly resolve in his Gettysburg address that these dead shall not have died in vain." It's a sacrifice for others. They didn't die for themselves. They died for their brothers. They died for the country. Check this out. It's a World War II poster. This is Lincoln's quote, "We here highly resolve that those dead shall not have died in vain." Remember December 7th. What was December 7th? Pearl Harbor. And so what did we have to do to ensure that those men did not die in vain? Check out this next slide. This is the largest American military cemetery in Europe. It's in Saint-Avold, France. There are 15,000 boys buried there, brothers next to each other. What are these boys doing here? And then this is Normandy. June 6th was the anniversary of Normandy, just this last week. This is the Normandy Cemetery, 10,000 boys. What are they doing here? We've come a long way from Metamucil and Kmart, right? What are these boys doing here? And I got a beautiful picture here. What is this boy doing? That's our son, Matt. That's what he does for a living. He plays the trumpet for the Navy Band. And at that point, he's playing for a massive dedication of a memorial in San Diego to all the submarine crews in World War II that are on eternal patrol. And he's playing taps. Now, when Matt joined the Navy, he had to sign a release. And this is what was on his release. "I understand that the penalty for desertion in time of war or national crisis is death." I saw that in his enlistment papers. And when I saw that, I thought to myself, I'm going to put that into our church membership application. Because people leave the church if the air conditioning is too cold or the music is too loud. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. Jesus said, if you follow me, you must what? Take up your cross. You must be willing to die. Like Esther. I mean, this is really sobering stuff. You know, I asked a question last week. Who are you? You read Ephesians chapter 1, and you say, this is crazy. Paul is, I said, this is either onto something or he's on something. What he's writing in Ephesians 1. And so now we're bringing Ephesians 1 and all that heavenly glory into the moment that isn't so glorious. December 7th, the Navy identified the remains of a young man who was killed on the USS Oklahoma on December 7th. They're using DNA, and Matt was sent by the Navy to Petersburg, Virginia, to play taps at his burial with his family. And just a month ago, some of you may have read about two Navy pilots who crashed their plane just off of Key West, and Matt did the funeral. Hundreds and hundreds of officers and sailors, and he's playing taps, and there's a missing man formation. One jet flies out of the formation. And he said, Dad, I feel like this is my ministry. So we come back to this passage that I started to reference earlier, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He says, if we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O King. That's faith. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O King, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold that you've set up. That's faithfulness. Now, I want to tell you a story about another Esther. That would be my mother. She was named Esther Victoria Easter. She was born on Easter Sunday, 1925. She lived into her 80s, and when my mother was maybe 20, I don't really know the exact age, 19 or 20, she fell in love with a young man, a seminary student, who was doing an internship at my grandfather's church, and they got engaged, and he went back to the seminary and sent her a letter and broke the engagement, and my mother was crazy about that guy, and the family is fairly sure that my mom married my dad out of rebound. My dad was always crazy about my mom. Sometimes I wasn't sure if she was crazy about my dad. Okay. So when my mother had that engagement broken and was crying her heart out, she wouldn't talk about it till the day she died. We'd ask her, I always kind of ask her, then she'd say, why do you want to know? When my mother was crying, she wasn't thinking about you today, right? You know, my mother married my dad and you got me. Thousands of people got me, for better or for worse. Marilyn got me. And I want to show you a photograph here. Okay, my mother wasn't thinking about all of our grandchildren. You know, the twists and turns of life. And, you know, my son, who has a national ministry now with the Barna Group, and my daughter, who is doing coaching, teaching English as a second language, doing coaching at Arapahoe Community College in Littleton, Colorado, or my son, Matt, who's playing taps for the Navy. My mother didn't have any of that in mind. But did God have it in mind? See? So you have to say to yourself, whatever the circumstances are, no matter how bizarre, I mean, you read the genealogy of Jesus, and there's a list of scoundrels and criminals and all kinds of crazy people that are in the genealogy of Jesus. I love to say, whose picture is in your wallet? And how did you get here? Five generations ago, what happened when two people fell in love, or maybe they didn't, And here you are. Marilyn's grandfather was illegitimate. I'm glad. You know, you just can't see the whole picture of what God does. And because it's not just about you, it's what God wants to do through you, and not just through you in the moment to be nice to people, but you never know how your decisions are going to affect your children, your grandchildren, your great-great-grandchildren who will never know who you were. Would you please stand with me? For such a time as this, when my mother got that letter breaking the engagement, and my grandfather, he was just furious. He wrote a letter to the seminary and said that they should not grant this young man ordination because he broke this betrothal. The world has changed. But I just think about my mother. It was for such a time as this. It's incredible. Isn't it just incredible?